Welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host, Jason Kleep. On today's episode, unfortunately, we do not have our co-host, Gabe Yanez. We were doing this one in person in the Bay Area, and I had a very special guest, Sal DiStefano. Sal is a husband. He's a father. He's the co-host of the Mind Pump podcast, where they do incredible work interviewing great guests and then sharing that with the rest of the world. And today, I wanted to dive into his background. I want to talk about faith. I want to talk about family. I want to talk about what it was like building a business and how that's evolved over the years. And that's exactly what we did. We dove deep today with Sal. I got so much out of this episode. I hope you do as well. So whether you're in the garage training hard or you're on a long road trip, enjoy this episode. Take in a lot of what he has to say, because I thought that he was really sharing quite a bit of knowledge and incredible stories along that journey. If you haven't already, go back, check out our other episodes. If you're new to the podcast, I appreciate you guys checking these out. Please leave us a rating, leave us a review. Definitely helps out the podcast. But without any further ado, let's dive into a great episode with Sal on what it means to be a family, father, husband, and incorporating faith in all of those things. Let's get it.
Yeah, we were talking about the Minnesota whatever. That all study. Of a sudden we, the Minnesota study, the recording started. But before we took a break, we were talking about, you have two older children, you have two younger children.
Yeah.
Definitely want to dive into a few different factors there. But one thing that you said that I thought really resonated was that your older two children went to a more common type of school, right?
Yeah.
And you're looking at homeschooling your younger two children. So how old are they, and how did that decision come to be? Because you're the first person that I've met now, and this has actually been a hot topic that I've been talking about with a few friends about homeschooling versus your more, you know, common school. You're the first person I've met that has two older children that went one path, and now you're choosing to change that for the younger two.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
Yeah, so I have an 18-year-old, a 14-year-old, and then a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. And yeah, it's a big gap. So, but yeah, married twice, right? So the first two with my first wife, second two with my wife now. And I wanted to homeschool with my older ones, but we both worked a lot at the time, my ex-wife and I, and it just wasn't feasible.
But you wanted to at the time.
I wanted to. She wasn't so much on board, but I wanted to. But it just wasn't feasible. You know, it's more work. It's more work to plan and facilitate and, you know, do all that with homeschooling versus, you know, you bring them to a school that you pick and you like, and then you drop them off and you trust that they're doing, you know, the right thing or whatever. And then they come home at, you know, 3 o'clock. But with my wife now, she stay at home. My hours are way different. You know, I used to work 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. I owned a wellness studio and I trained clients and all that stuff. And I was there all the time. Now, you know, I work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I'm off Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. My wife stay at home, and we have the ability to be able to facilitate the education. So now we're going to be able to homeschool.
So above that, and this was a conversation we were having with Ben Alderman actually on this show a little bit ago. So I totally get, like, you're in a different place where you have the ability to do that. And that's hard. It is. Like, not everybody has the same flexibility you have. But what draws you to the homeschooling concept over, like, where your older kids, because what is your daughter or your son, is he a senior?
No, he's off to college.
He's off to college.
Now he's off to college. Oh God, man. You know, the more you dive into traditional, I say traditional, what's accepted as common school, the more you dive into it, the more you realize just it's not super conducive to creativity, learning, to developing kids into potentially successful individuals. You know, first off, you're in a classroom with everybody's the same age. That's not real life. And homeschooling, you know, we want to encourage that our kids are with varying different ages. Now, when you see kids of different ages playing together, what you find is the older kids take leadership roles, younger kids follow along. You know, like, for example, my 3-year-old, if he's around his 3-year-old cousins, they fight each other and they fight over their toys and stuff. When he's with his 5-year-old cousin, it doesn't happen. It's a different, you know, it's a different dynamic. So that's number one. Number two, you know, the traditional, like, here's your subjects, here's how you're going to learn them, here's how you memorize them, here's your grades type of deal. You know, if my kid is really into math and doesn't really want to learn too much English right now, well, I'm going to go in that direction. Let's see how far he wants to go. Modern marketplace is all about specialization. It's not about having a broad range of skills. It's if you get a job and you're successful nowadays or career, it's because you're very specialized in one area. You know, you talk to a computer engineer and you ask him, you know, how much of his literature, you know, right. education played a role. It just doesn't, right?
Right.
So that's the other thing. It's also free flowing. It's much more, we have more control.
You have more control for sure.
Way more control. And look, I come from the health and fitness space, and this is, I think, true for all spaces. But in the health and fitness space, I've made this comment on my podcast many times. In fact, I said it on the show we had you on, and that is if you live the way you're supposed to live in the modern world, you're going to be sick, fat, and unhealthy. That's just a fact. You have to live differently. Like if you eat healthy, if you exercise regularly, you go to bed and wake up at the same time every day, you're not like everybody else. You're weird. Okay. Look at kids today. Like depression is going through the roof, anxiety through the roof. They're medicated. They're not doing well. Kids are not doing well right now. They're suffering terribly. Obesity, even with children, is exploding. I mean, when I first became a trainer, type 2 diabetes was called adult onset diabetes because only adults got it. Mm-hmm. You developed it as an adult. Then they changed the term to type 2 because kids were getting it. So they said, we can't call this adult onset. So I'm like, I don't want them in the system. I don't want them in the system. I want to have a little bit more control over what they learn, what they're exposed to. And then I want to surround myself with other parents who are like-minded with their kids, you know, type of deal. But it's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
It's way more work, way more time, way more energy. So it's definitely gonna be more challenging.
With your older kids, do they play traditional, like do they play sports?
Some, but no, they're not athletes, no.
Okay.
But some, yeah.
So I'm wondering from a homeschooling perspective, just one of the things I think about is like, the takeaways from sports, but just because sure. you're homeschooling doesn't mean you can't play sports.
No, I
mean,
you can play do all
kinds,
stuff.
You can play all kinds of rec sports and whatnot. Like I have a friend of mine that has five boys and they all play different sports.
Mm-hmm.
So you could find a way to connect with other kids through that type of thing and then just be at home. But I find that to be really interesting in what you're talking about. It is a lot of work. And I'm curious if your perspective will shift as your kids get older in the homeschool system, because you've seen it both now.
Yeah. 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 Well, when I was a trainer, I had clients who homeschooled their kids and I remember being very skeptical.
Right.
But I've seen the way that these kids have turned out. And I knew these kids because I trained them when they were young also as a client. And I know that if they stayed in the traditional system, it would have broken them. Some of these kids really had some challenges through homeschooling and through the flexibility of their parents being able to facilitate their learning and growth. These kids are very well adjusted, successful, you know, young adults. And so, and again, look at the data, you know, look at the data on how well homeschooled kids do with things, like I said, depression, anxiety, you know, their careers, they do very well. So, and you have lots of flexibility. Like that doesn't mean I can't sign them up for classes.
Right.
Or have tutors or have them go to school 2 days a week at a particular place or involve them in a club of some sort. I just have much more flexibility. But talking to homeschool parents, they'll tell you like, oh, we do all of our schooling in the, like 2 hours and the rest right. of the day we have
time to do other stuff.
Yeah, it's like, so, what are they doing all day?
Well, then that's an interesting question. So your son, he's
in college now.
He's in college.
Yeah.
So do you still think that college is a good idea?
I think, so here was the conversation I had with him and I'll have with all my kids.
Right.
If you want to do formal education, and you want me to pay for it, or you want to get a loan, look at the market value of the education. If it doesn't match, then go get that for free on YouTube or on the internet. Okay, so that's what I told my son. If you want me to pay for your college, or you want to get a loan, and you want to get an art history degree,
sure,
you want to learn that, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But I'm not going to, you shouldn't put yourself in debt for that, or I'm not going to pay for it, because your art history degree on the market is worth nothing. It's just a fact. Like, what do you do with that, right? So go learn that on your own. So my son went and he's learning computer science and computer security.
Okay.
So that's got a lot of market value. Yeah,
for sure.
Fine. I'll pay for your college.
You're the first person I think that summarized it like that to me, but I completely agree with you. Meaning like I saw people that when I went to college who spent, you know, $100,000, $200,000 on college, when they get out, the average salary of that same position
makes no sense.
Was whatever. And so they're already starting way behind the eight ball. And so it's hard for them to make strategic investments and whatever, because they're just so stressed because they have this huge loan or whatever it is. So I think the way you're putting it, like, for example, if my kids want to be a doctor, a lawyer, or an engineer, or in your case, a computer science engineer – Like that, those are things you pretty much have to go to like traditional schooling for. It's hard to get into medical, you know, to become a doctor off YouTube. But there are many other things you could do that you could acquire a ton of skills that are available nowadays through podcasts, YouTube,
et cetera. Well, some things require formal education.
For sure.
They're not going to allow you to practice medicine, right? Unless you go to medical school.
Yeah.
You know, I think you have to look at the market viability and then determine if the debt, just like any debt,
right?
This is life. So I don't tell my kids you can't learn anything. I say if you're going to invest in something or you're going to go into debt, especially if you're going to go into debt, then look and see if it's worth it. You know, you look at the data. This is what I hate about some of these studies that they show on kids that go to college versus kids that don't go to college. Kids that go to college earn an average of $20,000 more a year or whatever. What they don't parse out are the kids that didn't go to college but who are focused on something. They just lumped everybody who didn't go to college, which includes a bunch of kids that don't give a shit and whatever, right? If you took the kids that didn't go to college but knew what they wanted to do, had a career in mind and pursued either entrepreneurship or whatever, and then compared them to that big old, you know, category of kids that went to college, I bet you would see that they would do at least as well, if not better. And I think if you compared them to people who went to college with a drive, now you're looking at a better comparison.
Yeah.
So it just makes sense to me. Why would I go to school? Look, okay, you could go to school, get a 4-year anthropology degree. Okay. Let's say you went to a really expensive college. You got into a really good college. So you graduate with $100,000, let's say $150,000 worth of debt. So $150,000, 4 years of college, anthropology degree, which either you work in a museum or what, you teach anthropology. There's not much you could do with that, right? But yeah, $150,000 in debt. Now let's take another kid who goes, I'm not going to go to college, but I want to open up a franchise. I want to open up a retail franchise. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to work in one for a year. Then I'm going to move up to management. Then I'm going to move up into district management. And then I'm going to try opening my own or whatever. Now, who do you think is going to come out better at the end of 4 years? $150,000 worth of debt? Or this person's been earning money and experience the entire time?
For sure. And the only pushback that I have to that is like, and this is something I think about all the time, is like, I totally agree with everything you said, but what if the person, and I guess your answer to this would be, if you're not motivated, you're not motivated. Meaning,
that's right.
One of the things that college contributes to is that there's a system that pushes you through, that you get this degree at the end, which gives you some credibility, sure, for an employer. But if you're on your own and you don't have a support system around you, you know, you could just end up not doing anything.
Yeah, it depends on the kid.
But it depends on the kid. Like,
I didn't go to college. I don't have a formal degree. But I, you know, at 19 years old, I was making, you know, 6 figures managing big box gyms.
Right.
You know, so it depends on the kid. But the debt that you graduate with, nobody considers that. And now they're making a case for taxpayers to pay everybody's debt off, which is crazy to me. Like, what about people who started businesses with debt and all that stuff? So it makes no sense.
Yeah, I am curious, like, for you, so you went through a divorce, you have older kids and younger kids. What is their relationship like? How does that work? Like,
yeah, so with my older kids, we have dual custody, so it's 50-50. So sure. Half the time they spend the time, well, my son's now off to college, so now it's just my daughter who comes with us half the time. She's got a great relationship with her younger siblings. You know, she was the youngest, but now she's the oldest in the house.
Right.
And different responsibilities at my house than at her mom's house, right? Her mom's house is just her mom and her. My house, it's me, my wife, a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. So, you know, 8 o'clock at night, you can't make a lot of noise. You can't watch whatever you want on TV whenever you want. You know, you have to help us with certain chores. And so it's different, but it's a different experience and different learning. But I mean, it's a challenge. You know, every other week I have to say bye to her. You know, she goes to her mom's house. That's really hard.
So on that note, like every other week having to say goodbye to her, like I can't, I mean, as of recently, I understand partly on that, but that's difficult. How did, looking back on it, and I was listening to you talk a little bit about this on a podcast, but if you look back on your first wife and your relationship, for people listening, like there's a lot of men and women who listen to this podcast, but they want to try and like be the best version of themselves. And I know you do too. And I do too, right? We want to be the best we can be. And the only thing we could do, and you said this really well, like when you go through difficult times, like you got to be able to learn something through that experience. Otherwise it's just like a shitty experience, right?
You either have post, you know, traumatic stress, or you have post-traumatic growth.
Right.
And they're both real.
And I'm yeah. And so in that particular case, like How did that process work, and what were like some takeaways you had going into this new relationship? Newer, I shouldn't say new, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, it was, I mean, that's a good question. I thought my value was that I made money and worked. And so that's all I did. I wasn't very present. I worked all day long. I would see my kids, you know, on the weekend, maybe on a Sunday, sometimes Saturday and Sunday, and I'd play with them, but I wasn't involved in, you know, raising them or diapers or making them lunches or, you know, talking with the teachers or anything like that.
Cause you were running clubs at the time, or you, then you had your own,
I had my own,
and then you had your own spot.
Yeah. Yeah. Then when I got divorced, all of a sudden the sense of potential loss of my kids was like a big deal. Right. So I'm like, oh my God, I'm not going to see them half the time. And it was just kind of this wake up call. And so now I had to be very involved, because when they're with me, it's like, what am I going to do? Like, I have to be there. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, making them lunches and breakfasts and taking them to school and working with teachers. And through that process, huge learning curve, very stressful, because I'd never done that stuff before, never managed all those things before. I realized that that's how you know your kids. You don't know your kids by playing with them once a week or taking them on vacation. You know your kids by the everyday, day-to-day, wipe their face, you know, change their diaper, like whatever stuff that you do on a daily basis. Part of that came a lot of guilt, like, oh shit, you know, I definitely wasn't present, you know, before. But moving forward, a far better father. I was, you know, more present with 50% custody than I was with 100%, you know, when I was married. So that would have been the biggest change if I could go back, for sure.
But like, how would you even, but I imagine like, if you look back on your relationship with your wife, ex-wife and your children, like, I imagine if I had asked you this same question like 20 years ago, or whatever years ago, do you think you would have said like, hey, I don't have good perspective on it? Like, you probably thought you were doing the best you could, because.
Yeah. And I was. I mean, I was. I'll have some compassion for myself. I was. Hindsight's interesting, right?
Because
you look back with the wisdom you have now. So it's not really fair, I would say, to judge, you know, in the sense that you learn from it and you grow and you change. But looking back, yeah, I was definitely doing the best I could. I just wasn't aware enough of, you know, what I wasn't doing or what I was missing out on, I should say. I thought it was all work, right? Like, oh, diapers and this and that. But that's the relationship. That's how you know your kid. That's how you, you know, putting them to bed and, you know, that kind of stuff. That's how you get to know your kids. That would be a big one.
But I guess, like, for someone who's in a similar situation to you are, like, how would you have, what do you think, what do you think you could have incorporated at the time in that relationship that maybe you incorporate now to give better checks and balances on what you're talking about? Like, I agree with everything you're saying. I'm just wondering, from like the relationship with your ex-wife, is there anything that you think you could have done, like check-ins? Like, I'm just kind of curious, like, how it gets to the point where work takes over, you miss out on this time, but then also it ends up in, and oftentimes it's just going to happen anyways, and that's fine, right? I'm just wondering.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we were both very avoidant, in the sense that, you know, when there were challenges, we were just like, just keep moving. Don't talk about it. Just keep moving. And then what ends up happening is, you know, you move 2 degrees away from each other, but then you add 15 years of that. And now you're like completely on other ends of the universe. So, you know, that's a big one. Spiritual practice, would have been massive. That's been the most profound thing that I've, you know, that's affected me, especially more recently.
All right, taking a break from the podcast to talk to you about the Train Hard app. If you're listening to this episode, means you care about training, protecting, and providing, which means that you care about your health, your fitness, and becoming the most capable human being you can, just like me and Jason. Me and Jason use the Train Hard app for our training because there are 3 programs and it has something regardless of the season in your life you're in. If you have the time and energy and you're trying to be the fittest, strongest human being you can, we have 4 strength and conditioning 5 days a week. If life is super busy right now and you need something that's just keeping your momentum from getting to zero, 20, 30 minutes max in the gym, in and out. It has a dumbbell version. If you don't have access to a bunch of equipment, we have the EMOM program. And if you're just trying to be the most jacked dad in the room, work on your body composition, we have the Flex program, which is exactly how I train and the program that I write. So if you haven't already, check the link in the podcast show notes, download the Train Hard app, train hard, but let's get back to the show.
Yeah, well, I heard you talk about meditation and spirituality, and I'm curious, from meditation perspective, what does that mean to you? And then I definitely want to dive into the spirituality piece, because you've said it now, I think twice with me today. We've been together for a while. How do you think that would have impacted you? Well, we'll start with the spirituality piece, and then we can talk about the meditation, but I think they're probably one and the same, right?
It's prayer.
Yes, prayer.
Yes.
As meditation, right?
Yeah. No, it's just prayer. I started a practice not that long ago. Well, this has been a long journey, but the practice that I'm about to talk about started relatively recently, where I will physically get on my knees and pray out loud. And
like last year?
Yeah, about 6 months. And it's the most honest that I've ever been in my life. I'm a Christian, so I believe in God, and so talking to him and believing in him, he knows, he knows the truth. So I can't lie. We lie to ourselves a lot. So the conversation with God becomes very open and honest. And then the physical practice of getting on my knees and doing it out loud is very different than doing it in your head or whatever, which is, what I would have done in the past. And it's had profound impacts. One of them being the personal growth. I'm being very honest and I'm talking it, out loud to some, to God, who knows me and knows everything. And the other part of it I can't explain, which is he listens and he answers in some of the most insane, wild, crazy ways that I could have never imagined.
Well, so breaking that down a little bit, I think everybody has their own like journey, whatever mm-hmm. that may look like with spirituality and religion. And mm-hmm. there's so much to unpack there. And I know, but it took you a while to get to the place where you could do what you just said.
Yeah.
And
I was an atheist.
Well, and if someone just said like, let's just say you're an atheist, a decade ago.
Yeah.
And we're like, hey, tomorrow I want you to get on your knees. I want you to pray. It wouldn't have meant anything because it wasn't packed with like where you're at today. So I'm curious like how that whole journey has developed and then where prayer and meditation and spirituality, like how did it all evolve over time? If you went from an atheist to now you're saying in the last 6 months, your life has been changed by this.
Well, seems it's been like changed it's, longer than that, but I'd say last, sure. Yeah. So, look, what's the pursuit of fitness at the end of the day? What is it? Right. It's a vehicle for personal growth. Is it not? Right. Yeah. I want to get better abs. So you start working out and then you start figuring out like, oh, this is hard, but I'm going to keep doing it anyway. Oh, I'm not going to look like the guy in the magazines, but I'm going to keep doing it anyway. Or body acceptance. I have a relationship to pain. Now let me look at diet. Oh, look at diet. Okay. Well, let me follow macros. Oh, wait a minute. That's not very balanced. This is why I overeat here. And this is why I feel this way when I eat this particular way. And now I want to feed myself in a way to take care of myself. And okay, I got that handled. Now let's look at sleep. And then you start looking at sleep. And then, well, what's next? Oh, maybe I'll meditate. Oh, there's a spiritual component here. You follow fitness long enough, if you're growth minded, you'll end up in the spiritual side. At some point, you're going to end up there because it's all part of growth. I don't care how you look at it. Like I did, I looked at it from a science and data perspective. The data is very clear. People that have a consistent spiritual practice are healthier, happier, less depressed, less anxious. They stay married. They're more successful. It's better. That's the data. Okay. So if I were to tell you this diet in the data shows clearly it's better, or this workout in the data shows... you can't argue the data. That's for people who are like, they don't want to go in the maybe the metaphysical aspect of it. Just look at the data. So I started as an atheist, but I was always searching. So I was a real atheist. What I mean by that is the average person who doesn't believe in God they don't think about it. They don't really think about it. Right. So if you ask them, they'll say, oh, I don't know, maybe not or whatever. A real atheist is like, they thought about it and they search and they read and they try to disprove, right? That eventually will lead you where I went, because that's what I was. I was an atheist and I was searching and reading.
From being neutral on it to being like, so some people would say, oh, I'm an atheist, but they're really just kind of neutral. Like they're kind of like, eh.
I was searching. I was always searching. I was always searching and I was always looking. And, the conclusion I had come to at that point was, I was an atheist. And then I started to see some of the wisdom in the Judeo-Christian traditions. And first, the first place I saw it was just in how society is organized now. So like, to give you an example, okay. We have in our government here in the US and in the West largely, we have this concept of rights or liberties. Where did that come from? Think about this for a second. 10,000 years ago, actually most of human history, the natural order of life was I'm bigger and stronger and I'll take what I want from you. and I will dominate you. And it, and we are not equal at all. What do you mean equal? Look around. Nobody's equal. You're short, you're tall, you're sick, you're fast, you're whatever. Like, nothing's equal. That's nature. Okay. All of a sudden, we came up with this idea of inalienable rights. Where did that come from? It came from the Judeo-Christian religion. So when I heard it, and that's not a logical place to go. We totally take it for granted. We think, oh yeah, it makes a lot of sense. No, it doesn't. It makes no sense. If we all were born, if all humans all of a sudden existed and forgot everything, we would not come up with the idea that all of us have rights that we should protect.
Yeah.
That's not natural. So I thought, wow, what a weird concept. What a weird concept. Like, how the hell, we had kings and queens and rulers, and slavery existed all over the world forever and ever and ever. And all of a sudden, and then we came up with this idea of inalienable rights, which drove us to, you know, abolish slavery, which drove us to giving women certain rights that we didn't give them before, which drove us to protecting the sick and the whatever, right? Like, this is wild. I'm like, there's some wisdom in these traditions. So I kind of opened my mind to the potential wisdom that could be in these teachings that have created the Western world, which we all take for granted today. So I became more open in that sense at looking at the wisdoms, but I hadn't made the leap into the metaphysical side of it. Then, you know, so at this point I'm just like, wow, there's some wisdom here. Okay, whatever. Meanwhile, I'm also looking at, you know, learning just as a hobby, you know, things like quantum physics and stuff like that. And I'm like, wow, that sounds like magic. Like, that's weird. Like, Okay. Like, maybe I don't know everything. Like, maybe I'm being a little arrogant, right? Like, being an atheist means I know for sure there's no God, but I think I'm more of an agnostic.
And you would like claim it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But and then I became more agnostic. Like, okay, I don't know. I just don't know.
Yeah.
But also there's some wisdom in these teachings, and I can see it now, and it's really interesting. So that's interesting.
When you were an atheist, though, like, do you feel like if I had sat here and said, hey, I believe that—
I would have debated Jesus, you.
Yeah, you would you would debate with an open mind, or you debate with a closed mind?
Open.
Like, when you were, even back in the day, when you were—
Yes, okay. Yes. I like debate because that's how I learn, right?
Okay.
So I'd debate you, and I would accept your arguments, and we'd have a nice discussion about it. I wasn't like, don't talk to me type of deal.
What I believe is right, you're wrong.
No, you're an idiot, don't talk to me. I'd be like, well, what about this? You know, and I would have this discussion. So fast forward, we start the podcast, and, you know, when we started Mind Pump, it was always about personal growth. Our expertise is fitness, so that's what we communicate the most. But it's, you know, it really is a vehicle for growth, right? For being a better person, you know, whatever that means.
Yeah, I mean, learning. Today we were talking about pretty much very little fitness.
Yes. That's why we named it Mind Pump, by the way.
Right.
You know, a lot of people don't know that. So we weren't pigeonholed to just fitness. So at this point, I had discovered Jordan Peterson. This was years ago. And he was getting real popular on YouTube. And I'm like, man, this guy, like, I really like the way he communicates. Really interesting. And then he was communicating.
Super sharp.
He was communicating the stories of the Bible and how important they are to Western civilization. So I'm like, wow, there's so much wisdom here.
I haven't seen that content of his.
I mean, brilliant, right? So it's, oh, wow, there's so much wisdom here. And that's interesting. And yeah, okay, I could see that there's value in this stuff. Still don't believe in the metaphysical at all. And that was on YouTube. And then I saw a video pop up, like a recommended video, and it was Bishop Barron who talked about Jordan Peterson. Bishop Barron is a Catholic bishop, and he uses media to evangelize. So I watched it. I'm like, oh my God, I love the way this guy communicates. He comes from he's very intellectual. That's how you can reach me, is intellectually. It's kind of like C.S. Lewis. I don't know if you've ever read C.S. Lewis books, but it's like, you know, there's different ways to get to people. For me, you got to get through my mind first. And Bishop Barron's like super intelligent, smart bishop, you know, understands philosophy and history and just— So I'm listening to this video. I'm like, wow. So I start watching his videos. And I notice he's not afraid to answer any question. He'll talk about any topic. And I'm like, this would make a great podcast. Like, I want to interview him. Selfishly, I want to ask him some questions. I want to challenge him.
Yeah.
So I remember I introduced the guys to his videos. And at the time, it was— now you see people talking about religion and Christianity in particular on podcasts. But back then it was like, are we going to lose followers? Are we going to lose listeners? But we all, you know, one thing I love about my co-hosts is they're just as, like, you know, F everybody as I am. So whatever.
People don't want to listen. Right?
Like, yeah. If people don't want to listen, they don't listen. That was our attitude. So I contacted them And I reached out and they were like, yeah, we'd love to reach out outside of our space and talk to an audience that is not a, you know, Christian or Catholic podcast. So we fly down to Santa Barbara. That's where he was located. And first guy I meet was his producer, Father Steve, good friend of mine. And he's this jacked, he's like this little jacked bodybuilder priest or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
okay.
Yeah. Right. I'm like, bro, what's your jack? And he's like, I'm a big fan of your show. I'm like, no way. So we hit it off, you know, right away. He had a great team there. And then that interview, it was genuine. It was genuinely me asking him and challenging him and asking questions. And I felt very pulled. I felt very, very pulled by that conversation, very moved by just the whole environment. And so then that's when I started kind of opening up. Then I met Arthur Brooks, who's now a good friend of mine, who was doing a speaking engagement. Arthur Brooks is a best-selling author, Harvard professor. He had a documentary called The Pursuit that I had watched. I had become a fan of his. So Bishop Barron said, hey, we have the speaker, Arthur Brooks. I'm like, oh my God, I love.
What's The Pursuit about?
It's about how free markets have brought so much to mankind and why we should not abandon them. And he does it like Milton Friedman. I don't know if you're a fan of Milton Friedman. I'm a huge fan. And from a very compassionate, like, understanding way, like, no, this is the best way to lift the bottom is through markets. And this is the evidence and here's how it works and whatever. So I loved his documentary, loved his articles he wrote for The Atlantic. So Bishop Barron's after the podcast is like, hey, we have this, you know, Arthur Brooks speak. I'm like, oh my God, I'm a huge fan of his. Because would you guys like to attend? Absolutely. So we walk into this auditorium and it's filling up with people. It's going to start in like 10 minutes. Arthur Brooks is at the front getting ready. He looks down and he sees me and he across the auditorium, Sal DiStefano. I'm like, huh? And he runs down. And he's like, Mind Pump, I love your show. I'm like,
No way.
Yeah, like, get the hell out of here, dude. We love you. Like, your stuff is awesome. He's like, I'm a fan. I'm like, we're fans of yours. So he made us sit in the front row and he did his talk and he's exceptional. You should watch his stuff. And so that played a role as well. And so from then I started to find myself opening up more and more. And then eventually I came to the, you know, faith. Okay, now I got to make that leap. Do I believe in this? I see the value, but am I going to make that leap? And I did. I made that leap and they're definitely absolutely life-changing.
So did you go get like rebaptized?
I'm going through what's called RCIA. So I was baptized as a Catholic.
Sure. Yeah.
RCIA is going through all the different sacraments. So I'm going to do the First Communion, all the stuff and to be like to complete the whole process. So I'm currently going through that right now.
How long of a journey has it been?
Wow. Well, the first Bishop Barron interview was 6 years ago. You know what's funny? Having him on the show brought us more new listeners than any other interview we'd ever done.
Really?
We never thought in a million years that would happen. It's pretty wild. But yeah, so it's been like a 6-year journey and it's just continued to grow, you know, every year since. And it's had a profound impact on me as a human being.
You used to have a like one-on-one, like kind of like a health and wellness location, right? Where You really wanted to impact people. And I heard this, I think you might even have told me this a while ago, where you had attempted meditation and it wasn't really your thing.
Yeah.
And then, so where does meditation play in? Because you had said something I heard you say this a while ago, where it's like, hey, if you try it one time, it's like,
You got to practice it.
Yeah. It's like trying to get good at a clean and jerk or a snatch one time. It's like, of course you're going to be terrible at it. Like, you got to work at this particular practice. But do you think that the meditation, now that you're as far in your journey as you are, do you think that prayer has been more powerful than meditation? Do you think you do both? Do you do neither?
Like, I think they're both valuable. Prayer is far more impactful, but especially now, finding and creating a space for just observation and quiet, where you're not attaching yourself to any thoughts or feelings, you just become the observer. That is a skill that you need to develop, especially today, because we're so
we're connected all over the place.
I mean, do you wait in line anymore without being on your phone? Do you ever go to the bathroom without being on your phone? Like, it's like we're constantly bombarded with stimulus and humans didn't evolve that way at all. We always had space.
It's one of the reasons why I love doing podcasts. And I also love like going out to dinner with the family and whatnot is like, I mean, dude, I'm just you and I, we've been talking for like 3-4 hours now, and we get to really have good conversation because we're not being distracted. But like, how do you create that space at your home, and what does that look like for you? So what does it look like from a meditation perspective? And what does it look like from a, you know, utilizing what you were talking about with the prayer? Do you have like a specific location for almost like a prayer room? Like
no, so I pray 3 times a day. So in the morning when I wake up, in the middle of the day, if I'm here, I'll go in a private area.
So you almost get inspiration from like the Muslim religion? Like,
No, that's just my own. I want, you know, break up the day with three prayers. Okay. There was no specific structure. And then at night before bed. And then meditation would be, if I do that, it'll be in the morning before everybody's awake, where I'll just sit, you know, for 5 minutes and try to observe and not attach myself to anything, which again, that's a hard thing to do. It's really hard to have thoughts come through and not
attach to them.
Not to attach to them or not go off into them.
So let's play that out for a second. So you wake up in the morning, you know, I typically get up before the rest of the family. Mm-hmm. And as of recently, I've been incorporating like a morning routine that I'm getting into that's really been helping me set the intention for the rest of the day. But back to the meditation thing, that would be very difficult for me to do, what you just said.
Yeah.
And normally I hit the sauna now in the morning and I hit the cold plunge, but it's easy in the cold plunge to not get distracted because it just sucks so much. You're just thinking about how cold it is. But in the sauna or doing other stuff, it's easy to get onto one of these thoughts and like go down a rabbit hole, go down a journey. How do you put yourself in that position? Where do you even start to get to a point where you can go 5 minutes and your brain can just be clear? I can't even fathom.
It's never clear.
Okay.
It's never clear. It's just not attaching. So if you start thinking about something, it's like, oh, I'm thinking about that. Okay. Now I'm going down that path.
Now let it go.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. You're the observer. So you have to identify as the person observing, not the person, not the thought itself. Eckhart Tolle talks about this in A New Earth. It's a really good book on just kind of how to be present. That was a really impactful book that I read a long time ago that helps with that.
What was it called again?
A New Earth.
A New Earth.
Eckhart Tolle.
Okay. And so looking back on your relationship, kind of going full circle in this, like with your first wife and now with your current relationship, like prayer, spirituality, they're helping you do what? Like, what are they helping?
Everything.
Everything.
I mean, everything, man. It's like being with my kids when they don't want to go to bed at night and I'm trying to get them to go to sleep and I'm less frustrated and seeing more of the joy in what's happening. My using substances to distract myself, things like cannabis or caffeine, that's almost completely eliminated. Being impulsive, with certain behaviors, it's helped quite a bit in that sense. And then there's stuff I can't explain, praying for a better connection with my teenage daughter. And then, her boyfriend breaks up with her and I go pick her up and then we spend 2 hours connecting and talking, which, you know, trying to connect with your 14-year-old daughter, something's like almost impossible sometimes, right? It's stuff like that. Like I'll tell you a story. It's a true story. I remember I came in here and the guys were like, they saw the look on my face. My youngest daughter, she's 15 months old. For a second there, we thought there may be something known as spinal tethering. This is where the spinal cord tethers at the base of the sacrum. And if you identify it early, they can do a surgery and then everything's okay. But if you don't identify it early, the nerves can get damaged. It can affect their walking. But anyway, long story short, we were going to go to the doctor to get evaluated and then determine whether or not we want to do a full body MRI. Mm. Okay. Now, that's a scary thing. I don't want to put my 1.5-year-old, they have to do general anesthesia.
100%.
General anesthesia doesn't come without its own risks. Even if she wakes up fine and everything, it can affect the brain, whatever. I don't want to do any of that stuff. So I'm like freaking out, really stressed out. And so I'm praying about it. And, you know, I'm like, I need help. I don't know, you know, what direction you want me to go. You know, I want to, you know, follow your will. Let me, whatever. We show up to the doctor's appointment. Doctor's like, oh, we made a mistake on the scheduling. We're so sorry. We'll see you again in 3 hours. So I'm really frustrated, right? So I drive back to work, pray on the way to work. I park my car over here in the parking lot over here. And this is true, 100%. I'll show you a picture. There's a homeless dude who earlier, and I know this because my editor sent us a video of this. There was a homeless dude in the parking lot who was literally had made a fire, okay, in the parking lot. He sent us a video of it. That was this morning. That was the morning of.
Yeah.
I pull up. There he is. and he's got ash, you know, all around him. And there's a dude passed out on a mattress by the dumpster. So I pull up.
Which is not, is that, that it's not like crazy uncommon around
no,
here.
No, but the, you know, this is downtown San Jose, right?
Right.
So,
yeah, yeah.
And I see this.
Yeah.
So I look in my rearview mirror because I park my car. I see the homeless dude, you know, who just made the fire earlier or whatever. And I had remembered a conversation or a talk that Arthur Brooks got the same, actually that talk that I told you about. And Arthur Brooks talked about how one of the best things you could do, I don't remember how it led to this, but one of the best things you could do when you give money to a homeless person is to ask for something in return to get, make them feel like they're, like they have some value. Mm. And then the question is, well, what the hell do I ask a homeless person for? He says, ask them to pray for you. And that was years ago. And I remember I had tried it a couple times. I'd given a $5 bill to a homeless person and I'd say, hey, can you pray for me? And the look on their face was like, oh my God, yeah, I'll do that for you. So I really gave them more than just the $5. Okay.
You're the, not to cut, I want to hear the rest of this, but you're the first person I've ever heard that's used that. And going back to the Arthur Brooks example, I could understand why he would encourage that from a free market perspective.
Yeah.
To like get worth from a, there's an exchange.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not like it's not a pity. It's an exchange of
like, oh, I have value. I can give you something. And,
right.
And these people, many of them mentally ill, feel like they have no value in society. And so just asking them to pray for you. Right. So, and I remembered that talk. So I'm sitting in the car kind of stressed out. Shit. Are we gonna have to do an MRI? Like, what's the deal? And I look in my rear mirror and I see the homeless guy over there. And I just finished praying in my car.
And you're like,
and I'm like,
oh man,
I'm going to go give this guy money and ask him to pray for me.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I looked at him and I said, nah, because this guy had tattoos from his head down and he didn't look scary. Okay. He did not look safe.
He didn't look like he,
no.
Yeah.
I'm like, if I say something to him, homeboy's going to, he's going to give me hepatitis or something. So I'm like, nah, I'm not going to say anything. So I get out of my car. This is true. This is really what went through my head. So I get out of my car and I walk to come over here.
Sure.
And he goes, hey, sir, excuse me. So I turn around and it's the homeless guy. And I said, hey, what's up, man? He goes, hey, man, how's your day going? I'm like, oh, it's going good. I'm like, and then I'm like, you know what? So I looked at him and said, hey, can you do something for me? And he said, sure. I said, can you pray for me? And he looked at me and he goes, yeah, man, I'll totally pray for you.
Totally clear-minded, like the way he was talking
to
you.
Yeah, he's like, I'll pray for you, man. He goes, what's wrong? I said, well, my daughter, you know, we don't know if we need to get an MRI or something like that. And he goes, is there something wrong with her spine? This is a true story. He goes, there's something wrong with her spine. I don't know who this guy is.
Right.
And remember at the time, I remember when I was praying, I was like, God, I need a sign. Do we make this decision to do an MRI or not? Like that was the main thing I was praying. Help me. I need a sign. I don't know what to do.
Right. Because there was a decision to be made.
Homeless guy's like, is there something wrong with her spine? And I'm like, actually. So I talked to him about it and we talked for a little bit. And then I said, and he goes, okay, I'll pray for you, man. I think it's going to be okay. I'll pray for you. I said, can I give you something? I thought, should I give him money? But I said, let me ask him if he needs anything else. I said, can I give you something? He goes, no. He goes, you've given me more than anybody's given me in a long time, man. I appreciate it. And that was that. And I left and I felt this incredible sense of calm. Like it's going to be, I think we're going to be okay. Then we go to the pediatrician for the second appointment where they actually showed up. And now my daughter is, she is shy. If she's around new people, she'll like crawl up my shoulder. She won't, whatever. Now the pediatrician is supposed to assess her and she always cries with the pediatrician. And the way she's supposed to assess her is to see how she moves. Is she crawling? Is she playful? Like, and I'm like, this is gonna be hard because my daughter's not gonna want to do nothing for this pediatrician. Man, we got there and all of a sudden she was like performer of the year. She's crawling, she's playing, she's cruising, she's laughing. Pediatrician's like, she's fine, dude. You guys are totally fine. We don't need to do an MRI or anything like that. Trip off that. So, I mean, that blew me away. So, I don't know what you want to call that, but I know for me what that was, you know?
Dude, it's stories like that that are really I don't know. They're powerful, man. They're powerful.
I mean, I got emotional when that homeless dude said that.
Like, you should have.
Like, said, is there something wrong with her spine?
There's something about
that. What the fuck?
And you know, that I think about that all the time. Like the universe, I talk about like the universe having a plan and this and that, but really, you know, as I'm currently exploring some more of those type of things, like it's stories like that, you know, that, you know, I remember one time, like it was like probably 2-3 days after Ava got diagnosed with leukemia. I'm like, I'm just broken. I'm walking out and I'm at the hospital and they had like a little coffee cart and like, I'm just like crying out of my fucking mind. And, this guy walks up to me just out of the blue and he just like gave me a hug and like, it just like, it's like the right people at the right time say the right thing. And you're like, dude, there's gotta be something bigger at play, you know? And, that your example is like really like spot. Like, how can this guy,
well,
like, you know what I mean? Like, talk about his spine.
I don't know, but I was told by people who are helped me through this process of my spiritual journey. They say, go ahead and challenge God. Go ahead and tell him, hey, man, I don't know if I believe in all this stuff, but please show me. I want to challenge him and he'll do it. And that's what I did. That's what I kept doing. And he kept showing me. So, you know, here I am. You know, that's my journey. What I like to tell people is this, is that, first off, don't be so arrogant as to think you know better than billions of people over 2,000 years.
Dude.
Okay. Like, you have billions of people who have said this has had profound, this is the most important thing that they've ever done in their life. That they say, I place God above everything else. Billions of people over thousands of years. How arrogant are we to be like, they're idiots, we know better. Okay. So that's number one. Number two, if you're science driven, the data is clear. People who follow these practices are better off across the board. And, you know, just in pretty much anything you measure, prison, drug abuse, marriage. Now, people come up with their own individual. I know somebody who does this or whatever. Yeah, I know that. But, you know, look at the data, generally speaking. And then, I don't know, explore and be open. And see what happens.
Dude, you're right about the many, you know, billions of people. It's funny, like as of recently, my wife has gotten interested in golf.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've started doing a little bit of it. And it's funny because you look at some things that a lot of people do and you're like, dude, I'd never do that. Like, what do they like about that? Like, I don't get it. But there's a reason why a lot of people are doing something. Like, there's something about it.
There's
like,
a value there.
There's value there. Like, for example, NASCAR. It's not my thing. But there must be something about it. Like, but maybe I haven't explored it enough because millions of people show up there and love it. And same thing with golf, right? It's a great place to connect. It's a, you know, there's so many reasons why you might like it. But I think you're totally right. Like, looking at things that have a large following and being open-minded to why so many people are attracted to that in the first place.
Yeah, and then just the wisdom itself and being open to it. I didn't realize there were a lot of misconceptions that I had about some of the stories that I had read and what they had meant or not read, what I had heard of these stories and what they had meant, what they didn't mean. And, you know, it's interesting. Like I'll tell you what, like, you know, and by the way, if you believe in God, then you believe there's Satan too. Here's what's funny though. It's hard enough to say you believe in God. In fact, people will say things like the universe or they'll say, because why? Because it's not socially as acceptable or what does that mean? Right.
Right.
Then take the next level, say something like Satan is real. Oh, that's even more like, oh, I don't know if I can say that, you know, type of deal. That kind of plays into the fact that, you know, what we say as Christians, which is like, he's real and he doesn't want you to think that he exists. In fact, he makes it so that it's hard for you to even bring up his name or talk about these things. In fact, he makes it weird for you to say God. He makes you want to worship the creation and not the creator. Worship the universe or the planet or the trees. But what about the creator of all those things? So it is very interesting to me on how, and all the things that we take for granted. Like I said, like a lot of the things that we take for granted, the way we view things and the beliefs that we have that we just take for granted, that's where they came from. And they're not obvious, man. It is not obvious at all that people should have inalienable rights because they were created in the image of God. Who would come up with that if you look around at everybody? It doesn't make any sense. Nobody looks the same. Nobody's equal. That doesn't make any sense to me. And yet that was the belief system that created the most successful type of society that we have in recorded history. So there's something there is all I'm saying.
Yeah, there is. What role do you think through your relationships, right? Like you start off as a trainer, you manage clubs, you have a really knack for like communication and sales, right? Mm-hmm. I've known that about you for a long time. And then you obviously with four kids and two relate, you know, all this kind of stuff. What role along this journey has fitness played and how has that changed your mindset? So like for me, right? Fitness has evolved over the years, right? And I imagine for you too. Like, how has fitness evolved and what role does it play today, like right now?
Fitness for me was the beginning of pursuing personal growth, but I didn't start it that way. I started because I was insecure about my body and I thought I was too skinny and that type of stuff. But I pursued it and I continued to pursue it. And it's the most powerful, you know, antidepressant, anti-anxiety practice. It taught me discipline. I learned how to value the journey through fitness. Because, you know, when you first start off, you have goals and then you hit that goal and you have another goal and you hit that goal. And you're like, but eventually you're like, I just like doing it. Like, I'm not walking to get to a destination. I just like to walk, right? I just like the journey, the discipline, and my relationship with pain. You know, I remember when I would train clients, you'd get a client who'd never done strength training before. You have them do like a tricep press down. I remember one time I was training this lady. She's doing a tricep press down. And then she let go of the cable and it slammed. And I'm like, what's the matter? She's like, I think I hurt myself.
Yeah, everybody in the gym looks at you.
And I'm looking at her, I'm like, no, you're fine. And I'm like, oh, your tricep's burning. She never felt that before, right? You know, people who are advanced like you, you feel more pain than a beginner does when you work out. At least as much, but probably more pain. But your relationship to it's very different.
Mm.
They're suffering through it. Do you suffer?
No, you're almost getting fulfillment from it.
Yeah. Do you think there's carryover into life?
Oh yeah, for sure.
I mean, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a good way to look at it with the pain factor, right? Because in the beginning, it's almost like the more you expose yourself to it, the more of a reward it becomes. Like
you develop a relationship with it.
That's a good way to put it.
It is, and that. That's life, man. That's like how life's hard anyway. Like, I don't care who you are. It's going to hit you. So, you know, what a great beginning way to develop a relationship with hard and pain through a controlled, you know, mode of, you know, exercise or whatever. So that's what I've gotten for. And then the other thing, just, you know, I love helping people, and fitness is amazing because almost everybody's interested in fitness. Even if it's just to improve their aesthetics, just to look better. So I can talk to anybody.
Right.
I don't care who you vote for, you know, your sexual orientation. I don't care your religion, whatever. Like, most people are like, hey, how do I get stronger? How do I look better? Or how do I get healthier or whatever? So it allows me to connect with anybody.
Yeah, especially through the podcast. But on that note, right? Like, everybody's interested in fitness, but a lot of people aren't prepared to make that commitment. How has that impacted your relationships with your family and your friends?
Oh.
Because people know that you're like that guy.
Yeah.
But have you pushed people away?
Well, in the beginning I did, because I just wanted to get them to do what I knew would help them.
Right.
So, I remember even one time I went to my parents' house and like threw away a bunch of food. Like, you guys got to stop eating. But the way that you're going to convert somebody is by being the example, being the calm example. The calm, happy, feel-good example. And then you hope that at some point they come to you and go, man, you know what? You always got so much energy. You seem so chill. You look great. Like, what can I do? You know, versus like you hammering them over the head with back to the religion part. That's what got me. It's like, these people were so calm, so cool, so amazing. Nobody was beating, you know, hit me over the head with a Bible. It was me asking them like, oh my God, like, why are you this way? And I see you're so happy. And so that took me a long time to learn with fitness, though, because I was that guy that would like, no, you don't eat that. You got to work out this way. You got to do it this way, whatever. Eventually, it was like, I don't bother anybody. I just do my thing. Everybody in my family knows, like, I'm going to work out at a particular time, and I'll eat a specific way, but I don't say anything. You don't need to cater to me. It's not a big deal. I don't make a big deal about it. And I've converted more people to pursuing health. Yeah.
So I now that Mind Pump has grown so much, right? You guys have been able to consolidate your schedules. You guys put out a ton of podcasts. You guys dive into great conversations as a team here. From a work perspective, like with the kids, essentially, like on the days you're off now, are you just, I guess my question is, now that you've been able to build this up, what do you think with your children from a work perspective, like now you've been able to dedicate this time on the weekends, has that changed like your ability to go back to the 18-year-old? Like, have you had a conversation with them about your work-life balance back in the day compared to where, like, have you ever talked to them about that? Like, hey, like, I wish I had done this. I, none of that. I mean,
We've talked about it. It's like, you know, man, I worked a lot when you guys were little, and I wish it would have been different type of deal. But you know, they spend more time with me now because now my schedule's a little different. When I got divorced, it was such a, you know, when you go through something really challenging, either you keep making the same mistakes or you pause and go, all right, what did I do? Right. And that was an obvious one to me, was that I just wasn't present. So when I got divorced, I was like, I'm never working like that again. Mm. Now, keep in mind, Mind Pump was, you know, not even a year old
right.
at that point. So, but luckily my, you know, Justin and Doug both had kids. And so they were both kind of on board. I remember Adam struggled a lot with that early days. He didn't have kids and he wanted to grind. He wanted to work bell to bell. But I was an asshole about it in the sense that I was like, no, I'm not doing that. Now he'll tell you it's a good thing that, you know, we went in that direction. And now he's had his own kid. So we all value that balance. Ironically, the most success I've ever had, right? The most success I've ever had is now not grinding and working, you know, 15 hours a day, 6 or 7 days a week.
Yeah. I think it might be because of what we talked about, like having that balance, like with your spirituality, with your family, you're able to show up super hard at this particular thing when you're here because you're in an overall better state because of all the other things you're doing in your life.
Maybe. I mean, you know, or you know, I had to go through all that in the beginning to get to this point. I don't know. But yeah, I wouldn't trade it. We all value that. We all really value the time that we spend with our families and our kids. So we definitely make it a priority. Like if we do any business venture, if we move in any other direction, the question is always, does it require more time? Mm. And if it does require more time from us, then we typically will say no. If it's something that we can create and then let go, then we tend to move in that direction. But yeah, all of us are on board with that. In fact, it wasn't even, you know, this year we started working 3 days a week instead of five. And that wasn't even my idea. That was Adam's idea.
I love it, man. Well, I appreciate you. Thanks for taking the time to talk about, in particular, I think like your journey, your spirituality, the journey there was really insightful for me to hear and definitely eye-opening. I'm going to check out some of those, the speakers you're talking about
yeah.
and the books. But look, for people that are listening to this, like who want to know more about you, really it's the Mind Pump. I mean, dude, your guys' podcast, you guys are putting out 5 episodes a week. Yeah. There's so much content that I've listened to from you guys, but they can just go back. Is the best place to kind of dive into the podcast?
Yeah, just go Mind Pump and you can find us on YouTube, Spotify, iTunes, pretty much anywhere you can listen to podcasts. That's where we'll be there.
I love it, man.
Awesome. Thank you, brother.